Welcome to another episode of Quantum of Solace with David Robertson and I'm Al Smith of the Solace Centre for Public Christianity. Packed programme today, creation, the act of procreation, and what happens when things go wrong in a fallen world.
As fair art thou, my bonny lad, so deep in love am I.
There was some sad news revealed this week. I mean, something that happened a while ago, but the First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, revealed in an interview in the Sunday Times, before the SNP came to power in the 2011 election, she and her husband, Pete Murrell, suffered a miscarriage.
Yeah, and I found it fascinating just reading her statement. I had a huge amount of respect for her for doing this, actually, because she had kept it quiet, as obviously many people do who have had miscarriages.
Yep.
It's why you'll get people to say to you, we're pregnant, but please don't tell anyone until after the 12-week scan.
Most people do that these
days. Which, yeah. That's... I thought it was brave. I thought it was humbling for some people because it should have caused them to reflect upon their inaccurate jibes about her giving up children in order to pursue her political career. It turns out that that was not the case.
She did make an interesting comment in certainly one of the articles I read on it, that if she could go back now and change things, she's not sure if she would, if it would have prevented her from going on to do what she's done in politics.
I think one of the problems is that when we look at politicians, we then make judgments about their private lives, which we're not in a position to do because we don't know. And I think that became clear from that. I think the sorrow of miscarriage as well. And I think the other thing that struck me about it was that people who have miscarriages do feel genuine sorrow.
Well, they're grieving. They're grieving the life. I mean, what are they grieving? Are they grieving the life that they thought that they would have? Or are they grieving the child's life that they thought would...
I don't think that they are grieving the loss of potential life. I think that everyone knows that there's a life there. We're not talking here about a wart being removed. We're talking here about a child. Now, we've covered this many times. We do not talk about the royal fetus. We talk about the royal baby. We do not talk about tissue just being removed in an abortion. We're talking about a life being lost. And that's why parents grieve. And that's why miscarriage, which occurs in one in four pregnancies, is something that is very serious and we need to take seriously. So, you know, I know people are cynical, but kudos to our First Minister for pointing this out and for indicating her own personal grief. Can you take this broken boy and put the pieces back as one? Another politician whose private life got mixed up with his public life.
You're talking about Keith Vaz, the MP who was caught by the media in a rent boy sting.
Yeah, and the astonishing thing here, and it did astonish me, was Peter Tatchell defending him. Why do you think Tatchell defended him?
Because he's defending the homosexuality?
Yeah. I mean, it is almost as basic as that. I don't even think it's a civil rights issue and so on. I'm really disappointed in Peter Tatchell because I thought he had more sense than that. When we're talking about Keith Vaz, what we're talking about here, for those who don't know, is the man who is chair of the Government Home Affairs Committee, which is responsible
for prostitution
and drugs, amongst other things. He was responsible for legislating something which, if it went through, would have made him a criminal.
I know. Well,
but it didn't go through.
No, it's the hypocrisy of it. I mean, did you see him try to just go into the Commons as if nothing had happened?
Yeah, he tried to brazen it out, and then what he did was fascinating because he resigned from the committee, though he's not resigned as an MP, made in a statement about those who make rules have to be accountable, which is true. I still think he withdrew because of pressure from others in the committee. I think what is appalling...
Well, the committee was ganging up to have a vote and no confidence in him.
But, yeah. I mean, he's a married man, but I think for me what's appalling is not just the breach of his marriage vows, but the fact that the two male prostitutes, and they're prostitutes, by the way, not sex workers. I'm not going to use the phrase sex worker. It's not work. It's exploitation. Were Romanians. Cranmer, in his blog, had a fascinating thing saying, how do we know they weren't victims of abuse? And the bottom line is if you've got the good and great, inverted commas, in our society, hiring Romanian male prostitutes That is one step away. In fact, I don't even think it's a step away. I think it is encouraging sex trafficking and everything else that goes along with that. Now, of course, they'll deny it. They'll say it's consenting adults and so on, to which the simple answer is, if they weren't being paid, would they have done it? No. And in that sense, it's some kind of coercion.
Time magazine. The headline itself tells you a lot about where our culture is at just now. It says, "My brother's pregnancy and the making of a new American family." An interesting story about a transgender female to male who's having a baby. What did you make of that story?
I read it and I found it somewhat nauseating.
It's sad.
Desperately sad. It's, you know,
the confusion that's there.
The confusion. A man, inverted commas, with a beard and so on, breastfeeding a baby.
Notice the language they use in the article. He's not breastfeeding. He was chest feeding.
Chest feeding, yeah. It's where we're going. It's absolutely insane in every way. Men don't give birth. Biology 101. Men don't give birth.
David, you're just too old-fashioned. Men are going to give birth going forward. Isn't this the ultimate act of rebellion? It's against God's creation as part of his creative decree in this image.
Yes, it is. I mean, you have the marriage confusion, the sexuality confusion. Then you've now got the gender confusion.
You can't deny the reality of his biological sex.
Can, but they are denying the reality of it, and that's the fact.
The pregnancy itself, though, just emphasizes the denial.
And again, we're coming back to an inconsistency here because, again, you hear governments talking about we need 50-50 gender and all this kind of stuff.
Well, that's a pledge from the Scottish Government. Why are they being so binary?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, but advice to all our listeners. Do not expect logic, reason, common sense, or anything with
consistency.
Any of this.
Consistency. No. Well, you can bump and grind. It is good for your mind. Well, you can twist and shout. Let it all hang out. But you won't fool the children of the revolution.
In Australia, there's a four-year-old child has started gender transition before actually starting kindergarten. And this is part of the dreadful, we've got quite a few listeners in Australia, but you have a dreadful, shocking program called Safe Schools, which actually I don't think is making schools safe at all. I think it's making it the other way around. Now, of course, psychologists have questioned whether a four-year-old, a preschooler, is in a position to be able to say that they're able to change.
Do you know what? It's going to be 3 and 4 generations' time before we really see the consequences of the lunacy that we're following today.
Yeah. And that lunacy is seen in different ways because, again, coming from Australia, a teacher's guide to the Introducing Teddy.
Introducing Teddy is a bedtime storybook for really small children. Yeah. It's about a teddy who wants to become a girl teddy rather than a boy teddy.
Let me read the intro. Here's a story. Let us begin. Are you sitting comfortably? Errol and his teddy, Thomas, are best friends who do everything together. Whether it's riding a bike, playing in the treehouse, having a tea party, or all of the above, every day holds something fun to do together. One sunny day, Errol finds that Thomas the teddy is sad, and Errol can't figure out why. Then Thomas the Teddy finally tells Errol what Teddy has been afraid to say. In my heart, I've always known that I'm a girl Teddy, not a boy Teddy. I wish my name was Tilly. And Errol says, I don't care if you're a girl Teddy or a boy Teddy. What matters is that you're my friend. This is a sweet and gentle story about being true to yourself and being a good friend. Introducing Teddy can also help children understand gender identity.
You get the kids, you get the next generation. This is the way that societal values are changed.
Yeah, and let me read the teacher notes in case you think, oh, this is just a harmless children's book. Not at all. The teacher notes know exactly what this is. This is propaganda indoctrinating children.
Absolutely.
For example, you've got an activity 1, introducing Teddy the cover. Activity 2, being yourself. Activity 3, show us your bows. Activity 4, friendship. Activity 5, perspective shift. Activity 6, picnics.
Hang on. perspective shift.
Yeah, hang on. You just wait a minute. We're keeping going. Activity 7, sorting out gender. Activity 8, shopping for gender. Activity 9, finding...
Shopping for gender.
Yeah. Activity 9, finding the both column. Activity 10, when I grow up. Now, children are generally introduced to the idea by reading the story. They can then ask questions, discuss it in language they understand. Activity 11, discussing gender identity with children.
You realise what this is going to do over time? We're going to see a massive increase in the number of children expressing their desire to change.
Yes, and also, and if I'm a five-year-old and I think I'm a rabbit, who are you to deny me that? You know, I mean, it is at that level of ludicrousness. And by the way, what we're talking about here is people in our culture like to use harm as the definition of what's good and wrong. Well, the harm of this...
You're robbing our childhood of the gift of maleness and femaleness that we have from God.
Yes, and we're also destroying the family in lots of ways, and we're doing so much harm. Now, the new edition of the Solas magazine is out, and there is a brilliant article in that. About
which one?
They're all brilliant. But this one in particular. Well, there's one on identity, which is phenomenal. It's worth
Glenn Harrison's one.
Yeah, Glenn Harrison's one. That's worth the price of the magazine alone. But there's one on research showing how same-sex parents cannot provide what male, female parents, what mother and father. They can't provide it. And the research is fascinating. And people need to have a look at it. It's a huge research project. And it shows the harm that's being done by this whole re-engineering of marriage, of society, and of sexuality. Living alone, I think of all the friends I've known. But when I dial the telephone, nobody's home.
Talking of the re-engineering of marriage, this is Narcissism Squared. One of your favourite journalists, the lady who gave you the Atheist Bus campaign with Richard Dawkins, Arian Shireen, she's got an interesting article last month in The Spectator on marriage for one, polygamy. There's a growing number of women in their 30s deciding that they're not going to find a partner, but they want to marry themselves.
Yeah, let me read from Sarah Starkstrom, who decided to marry herself. I thought about people marrying other people without loving themselves first. How could they pledge to do all this stuff for another person when they couldn't promise themselves the same thing? I decided to marry myself to celebrate my independence and strength. I did it to promise to be my own best friend.
I did it my way.
Well, it's not just that. In the article, it talks about in India in 2006, there was a Hindu woman who fell in love with a snake, or a British woman who had a 15-year-long affair with a dolphin in Israel, apparently calling him the love of my life. You kind of think, how much of this is parody? How much of this are we presenting extremes in order to ridicule something that's good? And my answer would be, no, we're not doing that. What we're doing is saying is if you redefine marriage in this way, and if you live in such a narcissistic society, then polygamy, there's going to be no new words I've heard. I mean, we've got polygamy, we've got everything else, and suddenly polygamy comes out. People marrying themselves. Oh, my goodness. Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. Study him hard, hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. And the guy behind you won't leave you alone. Ring, ring, goes the bell. David, did you have to wear a school uniform when you were young?
I did, but I had a nickname that was Red Robo.
You had red hair, you had a red school blazer.
I didn't have a red school blazer and I didn't have red hair, so we'll just leave it. But what was interesting was there was a strict enforcement policy on school uniform. So I led a revolt about wearing school ties. We wore them, but I wore mine as a bandana.
Around your head. So, you rebel. Know. Yeah,
yeah, we won.
The gangs of Tain.
This was Tain Royal Academy. However, I confess I was wrong. I've changed my mind. There is a headmaster called Matthew Tate in Margate who has got in enormous trouble and has been likened to the Gestapo. I'm sorry. But parents have complained he's like the Gestapo because he sent home 70 pupils for not wearing the school uniform properly or the correct school uniform.
Well done.
And there's uproar well done. In the media. As I drove in to record this morning, I heard somebody saying, sociologists saying, well, we're teaching children to be creative and self-expression. Now, let me just say simply what's wrong with all of that. And I have written an article for Premier on this. Number one, if you wear school uniform, you don't get mocked for what you're wearing.
Yep.
Because everyone's wearing the same. And that's hugely important in today's unequal society.
Yep.
Our kids used to say, Dad, don't buy us Tesco two stripes instead of Nike shoes.
Right.
Number two, no, people don't express individuality. They express individuality as they are socially engineered by the media culture around them. So I don't accept that. And number three, it is important in terms of standards about what people wear and so on. So good for this, Matthew Tate.
Well done. Yeah. There's a great line from Keller, isn't it? Freedom isn't the absence of all restrictions. It's the presence of the right ones. What a uniform does is it removes a lot of the political stuff that goes on between kids. It actually frees them up to express themselves through their learning rather than what they're wearing.
Here's the other interesting thing. He's described in the Daily Express as the muscular Christian. Now, that's what I want to be. I'm going to the gym to work out to be a muscular Christian. I know what they mean. It's very simple. What they're saying is this, that this is the type of Christianity. It's not your kind of weak cup of tea, vicar, cucumber sandwich, vicar. Everyone's nice.
Spineless.
Everyone's wonderful.
No backbone.
It's not that. It's the kind of Christianity that says we want an equal and fair environment for all. So yeah. We're going to be tough on those who seek to spoil that. Great. We need more muscular Christianity. I contrast that in the article between a school I was at here where a pupil stood up and swore at me, mocked me, abused me, and I said to the teacher, why don't you deal with this? What can I do?
It's too late. We lost the discipline in the church, we lost the discipline in the home, and therefore it works out.
Yeah,
we lose the discipline in the schools.
Exactly. But her answer was, what can I do? Because if I send him to the head teacher will not exclude him, even for that.
Yeah.
It's to do with targets and figures, because the council have given orders, don't exclude people or your school will be penalised.
But children are naturally good. Their base nature is good.
Meanwhile, back to the world of reality. Three cheers for Mr. Tay, and I'm sorry, if I'd been a pupil, I probably would have rebelled against you, but you would have sorted me out. Bishop David Jenkins. Now, do you know about him?
Other than I know that he died last week.
Okay, you don't know.
I don't know the history of him. He was the Bishop of Durham.
Yes, he was famous for the phrase, the resurrection being a conjuring trick with bones. Now, he was saying it's not just a conjuring trick with bones. I think he was a little bit misunderstood in that. But he was consecrated in York Minster, and there were protests at the service, and 2 days after it was struck by lightning. Now, you can put that down to fabulous coincidence, or I don't personally. I'm a Calvinist. I believe everything is ordained by God. However, what fascinates me about him, he's a very complicated character, very political bishop, apparently very good pastorally in the kind of working class community where he was, but an academic theologian. And what intrigues me is you've got people like Elaine Storkey and others who are saying, oh, no, he was misunderstood. He was really quite sound. And yet, when I read his stuff, to me, he's an example of the kind of waffle that we get. So he would say, for example, I wouldn't put it past God to arrange a virgin birth if he wanted, but I very much doubt he would.
Well, hang on. The Bible reveals God's will that's what he did.
Yeah, but he doesn't think that the Bible does reveal God's will at all.
In fact, he's just a liberal.
Well, he said that the New Testament reveals nothing of certainty about anything important. Now, there, for me, the resurrection conjuring trick with bones.
Tell me, why is he called a Christian?
Well, because he would say that he believed in God and believed in Jesus and so on.
Which Jesus?
Well, does he believe in heaven and hell?
No, of course not.
The virgin birth? The resurrection?
No, nothing like that.
I mean, he was in spitting image. I mean, he was really quite a famous bishop in that sense. And we did mention Yes Minster. There's the wonderful clip that they've got in Yes Minster about the last thing that a bishop needs to be is someone who actually believes in God.
You see, the church is run by theologians.
How do you mean?
Well, theology is a device for enabling agnostics to stay within the church.
I don't want Canon Stanford. What am I to do?
Well, you could turn both candidates down, but that would be exceptional and not advised.
Even though one of them wants to get God out of the Church of England and the other wants to get the Queen out?
Well, the Queen is inseparable from the Church of England.
Sure. What about God?
I think he's what's called an optional extra.
Well, I'm with Jim Hacker's wife. I would rather have a bishop who did believe in God.
Yeah.
Speaking as a churchgoer, I prefer you to choose a man of God.
They offered me one of those, but he wants to turn the Church of England into a religious movement.
What gets me with this one is the confusion in the church overall when you've got, inverted commas, evangelicals who are saying things like, well, you know, of course we've got to be for transgender and same-sex marriage and so on. And then you've got evangelicals saying, well, the Bishop of Durham, he was basically quite a sound guy. No, he wasn't. He wasn't. There is nothing of certainty about anything of importance in the New Testament at all. I'm sorry, those are not the words of a Christian teacher. Actually, they're not the words of a Christian, a follower of Christ.
Yeah, but false teachers have been coming into the church since day one, since Pentecost, they've been coming in. And they masquerade as Christians, so they creep in unawares. One of my biggest laments about the church in these days is the failure of evangelicals to discern false teaching and to either seek to discipline it or to separate from it. You know, and
yeah,
we're seeing that in every...
You see that in lots of different ways, but
every denomination.
Also to identify it as false teaching, teaching on secondary issues, which then causes all kinds of problems. Jeffrey Williams. You know him?
He's a Christian and he's the astronaut. He keeps posting pictures of the Earth from space on Twitter and Facebook, and he's developed quite a following.
Yeah, he talks about, you know, you see the design, you see the beauty and so on. I resonated with it a lot because in my teenage years when I was trying to be an atheist, the only problem was facts got in the way. You know, it just doesn't make any sense intelligently. I mean, I used to walk along the Morwick Moor in the Highlands and just look up at the stars and look at everything and just say, no way is this an accident. No way did this all come from nothing. And no way has this always been here.
No, I mean, the heavens have a purpose. The earth has a purpose. Male and femaleness has a purpose. It's a reflection of the creative ability of God. Marriage has a purpose. It is a picture of the gospel, of the marriage between Christ and his bride. There is a purpose in all things.
Yeah. I mean, I would absolutely, absolutely encourage folks to go and get the Solas magazine. It does. Honestly, it just keeps getting better. This one is an absolute cracker.
Solasmagazine.com.
See you next week.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge and oddly enough, but makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in a society hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.